Greetings, friends and gentle listeners, and welcome to episode 65 of the Spicer Speaking Podcast. Very special episode at that. More to come in those news and announcements momentarily. Allow me to first say that I am your host, Judd Spicer, five-time award-winning writer, associate member of the Golf Writers Association of America, former ESPN radio co-host, still 11.5 handicap, come to you from Palm Desert, California, here in the outdoor sporting golf bosom that is the Coachella Valley, the entirety of the Palm Springs area, where fall soon finds us this week. Could feel it. Could feel it today. Could feel it this morning. Woke up. It was 68 degrees. First time I think it's been in the 60s in about 4 months. The peak season is soon to return. This show returns as the first of these announcements, as this is the onset of season 3 of the Spicer Speaking Podcast. Yes, 2 years in the books. Certainly would not have made it this far without your time, your interest, your ears. Thank you all so very, very much for your support of this endeavor over the past 2 years. Readily excited to get season 3 underway. You know, I have friends and folks and colleagues ask me on occasion, how's that podcast going? I say it's going pretty darn well. Some numbers to that effect. Spicer Speaking Podcast, to date, been downloaded in 30 different countries around the world. Outside of our borders, certainly want to thank the listeners in countries such as Germany, which is number 2 for listeners outside of the U.S. Want to thank friends in Italy. Want to thank the friends in Canada that have been tuning in to the Spicer Speaking Podcast. And again, those among 30 different countries around the globe that have tuned in the past 2 years. Domestically speaking, 48 different states have listened to the podcast thus far. Vermont? Not sure where you are, dudes. Bernie Sanders? Come on. The other outlier being New Hampshire. And I've watched The West Wing a lot, or at least I did in the past. I guess a fictional reference, but Jed Bartlett? Let's go. I want to check those boxes and get all 50 states to tune in. Further domestic numbers, nearly 650 different cities around this great country to date have tuned in to the Spicer Speaking Podcast. I certainly thank all of you for joining me over the course of this endeavor. Season 3 of the Spicer Speaking Podcast will get underway with an opening image essay that I trust you want to hear, that I think that you'll enjoy, on a very special sporting apparel company, and a very special man at that. Said essay will be followed by this week's guest, fellow scribe, fellow golf writer, fellow ink-stained wretch, now of the Coachella Valley. He's lived here maybe 6 months, we'll clarify that, but he has spent a lot of time here over the years. Ken Van Vechten. You can read his writings coast to coast in the likes of Met Golfer and right here in SoCal for the SCGA's 4 magazine beside the byline of Yours Truly. Ken's had an interesting, fascinating career. Yeah, writes about golf. Guy writes about travel. He writes about cycling, although we probably won't talk about that today. He's also written a lot of travel guides in years past, including but not limited to Golf Las Vegas, The Ultimate Guide, The Insider's Guide to Palm Springs. I believe there are 2 editions of that. Hell, he's even written Neon Nuptials, The Complete Guide to Las Vegas Weddings. That we may need to discuss a little bit. Also probably talk about Live Golf, and discuss a little bit of this week's President's Cup when we get to that visit with my guy, Ken Van Vechten. As I said, multiple fun announcements as we endeavor season 3 of the Spicer Speaking Podcast, the latter of which, no lesser, of course, is a new sponsor. It is with much pride and enthusiasm that I welcome Healthy Learning at healthylearning.com. Welcome Healthy Learning to the Spicer Speaking Podcast, California-based publisher of books and instructional materials, rather, on health, wellness, fitness, exercise, sports medicine. Reviewed their website and their catalog library thoroughly in recent weeks. Celebrating 25 years, again, California-based Healthy Learning has a library of over 3,500 titles. These are written all ages by a host of different experts in their areas of focus, which include, but certainly not limited to, nutrition, books on strength and conditioning, again, books on health and wellness, sports medicine, I mentioned that, the outdoors, medical fitness, mental training. Those are but a few of the subjects that you can find when you visit healthylearning.com. Again, so very enthused to welcome them to the Spicer Speaking Podcast. Of course, this program would not be possible without the support of additional sponsors that ensues with Desert Willow Golf Resort right down the street here at desertwillow.com. Make your tee times for the Mountain View and Firecliff courses, respectively. Be mindful of the overseed schedule, which we are now getting into here in the desert proper. Be additionally mindful of the on-site and excellent Palm Desert Golf Academy, which is soon to begin its season with the Signature Golf School's 2 and 3 day. Probably going to want to look on there fast. Maybe going to even want to look on there today if you need to brush up your game. Why? Well, because some of those are selling out fast. Go on desertwillow.com. Be sure to check out that tab for the Palm Desert Golf Academy. Get signed up now for those signature golf schools. As we get closer toward the peak season, more instructional opportunities will become available, including mastering the short game and beyond. Last but certainly never least, internationally renowned golf photography from the superb sibling tandem of John and Janine Hennebry. Their vast portfolio, of course, is shot internationally and all across this great nation, can be found online at the Hennebrys, HENEBRYS.com. And with that, friends, before we get to this week's visit with writer and author Ken Van Vechten, an opening image essay for you this week as we start season 3 of the Spicer Speaking Podcast. Opening image is brought to you by Hennebry Photography. Look, you own a golf course, you operate a golf course, you're the director of golf, you're the GM, you're the head super, you're the golf pro. You know, it's been way too long since you've had some new, fresh imagery of your grounds. Check out the Hennebrys, HENEBRYS.com. They're going to get that job done for you at an expert level. They've been doing it for a very, very long time. They're some of the best golf course photographers in the country. Again, check it out at thehennebrys.com. You know, regular listeners to this program may say, might recognize that the tenor of my essays herein are often of the critical variety, or so it goes. But it is my hope that said tone is recognized, if not sometimes appreciated, as critical analysis and learned critique instead of just whine and moan. Yeah, there are bad people. Live golf, for instance. There are bad places. There are bad things which require focus and vent, research and unveiling, dissection and just plain calling out to the mat to avoid as much as just to let those of lesser virtue get away with it. But there are also places and things and people in the fields of sport and the game of life who merit attention and time and words for their optimism, their hope, their actions, and inspiration. Here's a yarn spun to that effect. And this is the story of a kid born nearly 84 years ago in Lewiston, Maine, the son of a French-Canadian plumber of modest means. The boy's father was either so frugal or so iconoclastic as to, in front of his son, pull out his own teeth with a pliers as to avoid paying for dentures. This is the story of the same kid whom, at 10 years old, moved across the country with his family to SoCal. And because he struggled to adapt to English-speaking schools inverse to his native tongue, was an instant outsider. It's the story of a kid whom, because of being an alien to his new norms, he found his engagement and imagination flourish amid the outdoors, first in the realm of falconry, and in the years to ensue, as a segue from the art of repelling in the search for hawks' nests, became a vagabond rock climber. It's the story of a kid who at 16 years old rebuilt a Ford in shop class, drove it up to Wyoming, and spent the summer refining these same climbing skills. This is the story of a kid who, as he became a young man, was ascending to the repute of one of the country's pioneering climbers and equipment innovators. As he grew to learn more about this climbing trade, so dissatisfied was he with the style of European pitons, which left man-made impressions on rock climbing walls and mountain walls, he, via an $820 loan from his parents, revolutionized both the skill and ethos of mountaineering by teaching himself the art of blacksmithing and creating his own steel pitons for climbs with the tool, inverse to its predecessor, enabling the user to remove the piton from rock walls, thereby reducing, if not eliminating, the negative environmental impact of a climb. This is the story of a guy who used this invention to start a small, eponymous outfitting company before the age of 20, a young guy who lived a nomadic climbing lifestyle, traveling the world, traveling the country for climbs and some surfing adventures, basically vanishing for months at a time, living out of his car and sustaining on damaged cans of cat food for which he paid a nickel, sometimes eating squirrels and finding gas money by dumpster diving for the coin he could get for used soda bottles. This is the yarn spun of a fella whom, in his early 20s, on a climbing trip to Scotland, bought a rugby shirt that he soon enjoyed as a sturdy climbing apparel because the collar kept the sling from bothering his neckline, and he soon noticed that other climbers enjoyed the same shirts, and so he imported more of them, and they sold out swiftly. The shirt orders soon evolved to additional rugged apparel like hats, gloves, and shorts. The small endeavor soon grew to a modest business model and catalog, and now a married man and still just 25 years old, he founded a Ventura, California-based company and called it Patagonia. Despite some early speed bumps, the story grows to reflect a company which, fast forward to the mid-1990s, saw its revenue grow to nine figures with booming sales of apparel, outdoor equipment, and sporting wares. Along the story and along the way, the company began donating 1% of its sales to thousands of groups, many California-based, groups working to save the environment, and would later segue that same pledge into forming a coalition of big businesses committed to doing the same. This company was an early adopter of using organic cotton, was among the first in the country to offer on-site childcare, and created a preschool program for the company's employees. The same company also provides its employees paid maternity and maternity leave, the chance 4 weeks a year for salaried and hourly employees to work off-site in approved remote locations. The same company has three on-site organic cafes, access to hiking trails adjacent to the workplace, and offers its employees free yoga. On Black Friday of 2011, Patagonia famously printed a full-page ad in the New York Times, encouraging customers, rather, to not buy its products. And 5 years later, pledged 100% of its 2016 Black Friday sales toward environmental groups. In 2012, the company became California's first-ever certified B Corporation, which, in brief, openly welcomed scrutiny of its supply chain, social, and labor practices. Come 2017, Patagonia was valued at over $1 billion. And last week, this story and its protagonist, a restless businessman and reluctant billionaire with no cell phone and no computer and two modest homes and an old Subaru and with a personal valuation at $1.2 billion, this protagonist announced that he was giving away the company to the Patagonia Purpose Trust and the Holdfast Collective Fund, with every dollar not reinvested back into the company to be distributed as dividends to fight climate change. With the epilogue of his career and his company saying, "Earth is now our only shareholder." Patagonia is now reportedly valued at around $3 billion. It is estimated that $100 million a year will go from this trust toward environmental efforts. This is the story of Yvonne Chouinard. This is the story of truly walking the walk, and perhaps the most famous corporate mic drop of all time. And if the protagonist in this story has his way, we'll likely never hear from him again.
All right, folks, let's get to this week's guest. As prefaced, now permanently a fellow desert rat, he's a longtime accomplished golf and travel writer. Per the former, he's got a specialty in equipment. I don't think I mentioned that at the onset of the show. You can read his work coast to coast in the likes of Met Golfer and beside the byline of yours truly in the SCGA's 4 magazine. He's also authored some very interesting books that we'll need to touch upon, including but not limited to Golf Las Vegas, The Ultimate Guide, The Insider's Guide to Palm Springs, and Neon Nuptials. I gotta ask him about that one, The Complete Guide to Las Vegas Weddings. He's a man of such stature in the golf world that his name requires three words. Friends, we welcome Ken Van Vechten to the Spicer Speaking Podcast. Hello, my friend.
Hello, my friend. Thank you. I don't know who you just introduced there.
You've accomplished all those things.
Oh, I have. Yeah.
And probably more, probably a lot more that I didn't get to, but that we certainly will over the course of this conversation. But before we get to you, I think it would be remiss to not start with a few things going on in the golf world. This is stuff that you and I have talked about while riding on a golf cart together several times over the last handful of months since you become a permanent desert resident. I think regular listeners know that I despise live golf and live golfers. A couple things going on in the live golf world this week, which I'll specify, but first, just pass the baton and the mic to you, Ken. Your impressions on what's going on with LIV Golf.
I don't think my acorn falls too far from your oak tree. you know, our conversation, some of the things I've written, to me, it's just insulting. I don't care if these guys want to go out and chase some money, do things differently. You know, if they don't want to do the whole tour schedule, I get that. I don't have a problem with that. This isn't a thing of capitalism versus something else. It's a sense of propriety. And for these guys to sit back and now whine about losing access to things when their whole purpose was, I want to play fewer rounds a year. I don't want to play as many tournaments. And now they're falling all over themselves, lawsuits, allegations, pointing fingers, because they can't get into more tournaments. It's crap, you know? I mean, you know, the Saudi spin machine and Greg Norman gave all those guys some cue sheets when they first went over there, and they got all the catchy words about grow the game and, you know, family time and money for my charities and blah, 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 blah. And then I think they woke up and realized that, well, you know what? We have some commitments here that we probably didn't really realize we had.
Couple of things that are going on currently. Greg Norman, he's in Washington trying to throw out an additional live lobby to congressmen who are apparently going to give Greg their time for some reason. Additionally, it came out, I think today, not that long before you and I started chatting, that a petition signed by all participating live golfers, or at least those that played in the Chicago event last week, basically pleading, if not begging, the official world golf ranking chairman to allow them to accrue points so they can participate in the majors and the Olympics. I mean, the phrase is kind of lame, boring, tired, overused. We've heard golfers say it, but as you just offered, they want to have their cake and eat it too. I don't understand what's going on with this anymore. And candidly, it's starting to piss me off at this point that they want to leave, as you referenced. They want to play less for more money. Oh, but by the way, we still want to participate in the world's biggest events.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, I don't think the official world golf rankings aren't dragging its feet on this thing.
It's been two months.
It has taken a year, sometimes 2 years, to get a new league or a new tour fully certified. That if they thought that would happen overnight, that was delusional. I mean, I think maybe the guys signing the petition really thought what Greg told them, that guys, don't worry, we're gonna take care of you. This isn't gonna be a problem. And lo and behold, as they tumble down the ranking sheet, And a lot of them have been losing their automatic exemptions because it's been too many years since they won. It's getting serious time. I mean, yeah, Liv, if it's still around, will probably end up getting some points. They can't not get points. I mean, you can't say that the Asian tour is better than Liv and not give Liv at least some points.
I think there are over 20 tours that the OWGR recognizes and gives points to. Of course, all of those tours meet, I think it's 14 different criteria. Most notable among them is actually playing 72 holes with a cut, which of course Liv does not.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's some, they have some problems with their standards as they've set it up. I think they have some overblown expectations of the quality of their fields. You know, I mean, you can say, I mean, Cam Smith, okay, he's a real deal. Joaquin Niemann, he's a real deal player. But, you know, you go down the list of some of these things. Bryson's hurt. He hasn't won since the Arnold Palmer in 21. Who knows where Koepka is, where his head is, where his body is. But he hasn't won in a year and a half. Only it'll be 2 years in February. DJ really hasn't won anything since the Saudi event 21 and then the Masters in his 4 win years in 20. So these guys were tumbling down the line already. And now with the President's Cup in here and Bryson getting up today saying, we need to have the ability to qualify for this thing. Well, you did. It was called PGA Tour membership. Simple.
I'm glad you brought up the President's Cup. It's a good segue. It's going on this week. I think you, me, and maybe 17 other people in the world are interested in this iteration of the President's Cup. It's an event, of course, historically that the American team is totally dominated with an 11-1-1 record. It is an event that was starting to heat up a little bit as the internationals got more competitive, got a little better. The record, Ken, doesn't bear that out, but we could see from their lineup, they were getting stronger. Now, to me, this week at the President's Cup, which gets underway at Quail Hollow on Thursday, is when we're really going to first witness. Yeah, we've had regular PGA Tour events where we haven't had the Liv guys, but now we've got a big international team event where many of the dudes that you just mentioned, Cam Smith, Joaquin Niemann, they were going to be on the international team. DJ, maybe DeChambeau, we don't know. They would have been on the American team. There are a couple others. I mean, the international team, dude, this is a B squad that they're throwing out there with 8 first-time players, probably 3 or 4 of whom even the somewhat ardent golf fan that watches the game on television on a monthly basis couldn't even name. This event was basically fighting for relevance. And now what is it, dude?
Yeah. I've never been overly thrilled at the President's Cup. I mean, it gives us something to do every other year. It's kind of fun. You know, it will always lack what the Ryder Cup has, which is real animosity and history and vitriol. But yeah, this is a bit of a curveball coming its way. And who knows, maybe, I don't know, maybe something comes out the back end that they mix it up a little bit. You know, I've never really thought we need to have too many of these things. And so let's just throw out the formula and maybe do it again. Is it a mixed team event? Is it, you know, do we put 3 legs? Do we do Euro, World, US? I mean, something has to change because it's just, and as long as someone's going to pay the sponsorship bills, it'll go on. But, you know, eventually you got to think someone's going to get tired of that.
I think so. And this event, for a variety of reasons, the record mentioned, not to even include the facts, but I guess it bears further mention. I mean, look, this is the home stretch of the MLB season, college football, the NFL starting to heat up. This is an event that has not been that competitive. And now, to me, maybe it's just for one go around that this thing is like dead in the water, but I don't know. I think this is, again, going to be the first time that we really feel the absence of some of the world's top players.
Yeah, but wouldn't it be fun if some of these so-called no names, these young kids that haven't done much, you know, they throw up a good, you know, they don't lose by 9 or 12 or whatever. I mean, if they win, wow, what a shocker that would be. But if they keep it close, maybe that helps a little bit. I think we'd all like to see something that's a little bit close. But, you know, even the tour's kicking the fall schedule to the curb next year. They realize it's just not the time to do this stuff. And Ryder Cup can stand on its own right now. President's Cup really never has been able to.
Friends, you're tuning into episode 65 of the Spicer Speaking podcast. Ken Van Vechten, desert-based golf travel writer, is my guest. This interview, by the way, brought to you by Healthy Learning at healthylearning.com, one of the world's foremost publishers of instructional materials, health, wellness, sports, fitness, nutrition. Check it out at healthylearning.com. Ken referenced a few times over some of the publications that you've long contributed to. I read your recent article in it was Met Golfer. As said, you write about equipment a lot. Sorry, I'm just getting the page up here. There we go. It was about footwear. Is this correct? It was about footwear, yep. Ken?
Yep. Yeah, we've done a couple pieces on footwear with Met Golfer. Just to back up real quickly, one of the things we do with Met Golfer is that we're trying to approach the equipment hole and the editorial hole that we have available to us with something different than simply rewriting a press release from an OEM. We get into the weeds of what makes things happen. We've done, as I said, these two shoe pieces. We've looked at the acoustics of different kinds of materials that go into clubs. The whole, is it feel or is it sound that makes a forging better? Bounce, grind, loft, what do you need? Spacing, gapping, all that stuff. This shoe piece actually was, it started from one we did 4 years ago where we looked at outsoles and what types of shoes and cleat arrangements are most damaging on greens. And we're going to follow up with that one with a researcher at Michigan State, but he hasn't done his new research study yet. So we switched over and we're sitting around talking about how the golf swings evolved so much. And you see guys like Will Zalatoris or Scottie Scheffler smacking a ball 325 with, you know, nary a bit of shoe on the ground. And how does that happen? So really the gist of it is that, you know, shoes have changed fundamentally, perhaps along with or in response to or driving this new really aggressive golf swing.
Do you feel like for the average golfer, for the 10 handicapper or maybe someone 15 or even more, that shoes can literally make a difference?
Well, everybody that we've ever interviewed will tell you that equipment is the great decider. but I think shoes come in really more from a perspective of comfort. Okay. It's not really an adhesion problem for most of us. It's really you want to be comfortable out there. And I don't know if, you know, people think back when you wore an old brogue with nails on the bottom and it was heavy and it was leather. The outsole was leather. It weighed 7 pounds. What that did to us. And I think the new footwear really allows us to just to be more comfortable. And I do think with the modern swing, there's more moving parts in the lower body. And if you've got a flexible shoe that's light, it can go with you.
To that same point, when you write about equipment, which you do very, very well, something I've taken a crack at a time or two, and I just realized it wasn't my sweet spot, no pun intended. Do you ever feel like, okay, I'm writing this and the expectation of the reader is that they're going to play better golf simply by virtue of better or perhaps more expensive equipment, and then you feel guilty if they tell you they don't?
Well, I think we can take that from equipment or the whole the instruction industry, because we've all done how many lessons in our lives, and in golf is the ultimate aspirational sport that we have out there, and yet we never really attain that much greatness. We don't get that much better over time because it is a difficult game. And I think with modern equipment being fitted, if your shoes are working for you, whatever, it puts more enjoyment into the act of playing golf, even if it doesn't drop our handicap index by 4 strokes, because there's still something in all of our games that's going to send us haywire. We're going to toss 2 over the fence. We're going to top 1 in the lake. These are things that we will just never get out of our DNA at a certain point in our life. But all the shots in between there, or the tally at the end, I think it's almost better to tally how many pars and birdies you've had in a day, along with what your score was, and kind of keep that as a record versus just obsessing over, well, I shot a 78 this week and a 102 last week. What's going on?
What about here on the left coast? We've got the fall issue of Four Magazine coming out shortly. What have you got in that one, Ken?
I was down at Pechanga, the Journey, a couple of weeks ago, and you know, we've seen a lot of words on that course, and it's worthy of a lot of words. But what we wanted to look at with Four Magazine is how the Pechanga tribe approaches this concept of sustainability, which is so big now in all that all businesses talk about, is how sustainable, how green they are, how wonderful they are. But really, when you get down with the tribe, is that sustainability isn't a one-off concept. It's not something that's a line item in the budget or the mission statement. It's simply woven into the very way of their life, as they've always lived, is that they don't think about taking care of Mother Earth because, oh, we need to for the bottom line or for the press potential out of this. They do it because it's woven through their creation stories, their existence, their life, their economy. So it's a very, very different way of thinking. Actually, I won't call it a way of thinking because it's not a way of thinking. It's a way of being.
Yeah.
Just woven through. So hopefully it's a, it's an enlightening read for people.
When you were doing your interviews or your research where you were down there, and this is something that you and I have talked about a little bit. I mean, there's a Native American mystique on that place. There are little burial grounds. There are trees that can or cannot be touched. Anything in particular that really jumped out from the article or the interview or interviews that they did that told you something about that property along those lines?
Yeah, I think the trees are a big thing at Pechanga because, you know, those oaks are so big and so majestic. You know, in the Pechanga creation story, like most Native American creative stories, the things of the earth are, in essence, were the first people of the earth. So the boulders have a life. All the animals have a life. The trees have a life. You know the story when the course was being laid out by Arthur Hills and Steve Forrest. You know, they had one plan for trying to, you know, put a golf course in that piece of property. And then the tribe realized that how many trees it was going to cost them. And they said, no, we're not going to go that way. So up the hill they looked, and that's one of the reasons you get those amazing differentials in elevation change in that golf course, is they had to get out of the trees, out of those first people, those first spirits. And allow them to live. And then, as you well know, probably the most tangible evidence is on the ninth hole off on the right side in that par five. There's a burial site. There's a crematory site there. There's nothing other than a sign or two to signify it's there. They don't go out of their way to put up neon signs to say, hey, here's where, you know, our tradition is. But they simply just needed to get the golf course around that because of the significance to the tribe.
Yep. And if you go there and you hit one askew, don't go searching for your ball in there. Just let it go.
Let the spirits have it.
Ken, I mentioned a few of the guide and travel books that you've written over time. Neon Nuptials, Complete Guide to Las Vegas Weddings. How many different places did you visit or cover when putting that book together?
Boy, it was 55, maybe 60 chapels. what we'd... We went up, either I went up solo or my wife was with me, and I or we posed as interested in getting married at one of these chapels so we could get in and look around. And I didn't knock on the door and say, hey, I'm a writer. I'm going to be, you know, talking about your chapel here. Let me in. So there's a little subterfuge involved, but it really gave us a chance to look inside and kind of experience what a couple would experience if they were to go there. And it really turned out to be a fun project. And We looked at things like how kitschy we thought it was, how was the reception we got from them, how clean was it, how bad was it. I remember when we walked into, we opened the door and three cockroaches came out. And I think that was a first impulse for us that said this was probably not the place to go.
So romantic.
It was.
Ken, I got one more for you today. It was just within hours of our chat that Acrisure Arena had a press conference, talked a lot about Acrisure and the upcoming debut of our Coachella Valley Firebirds in September. The first concerts revealed. I'm not going to take up too much time with the dates or things like that, but I just want you to tell me which one you'd like to go to most. Here's the list that they rolled out. The Doobie Brothers. That one's actually the first one. I think this is going chronologically. Grupo Fermé, not familiar with their work. Maroon 5. We've seen them out here recently at the American Express. The Eagles and Jimmy Buffett. Which one would you like a ticket to most and why?
I'm a kid of the late 60s and early 70s, so it's pretty obvious which two of those I'd probably go with. But now that Tom Johnson is back in the lineup, I would certainly do the Doobie Brothers. there were really two Doobie Brothers in our lives. There was the one with Tom Johnson, and then there's the band that became whatever it was when Michael McDonald got the lead. I don't recognize the latter years. I do the former years. I'm also an inveterate Eagles fan, but you know, I've seen them. I've had a lot of life experiences with Eagles music. I think I'm going to keep that in a box now that the Eagles aren't who they used to be. So we're going Doobie Brothers. Tickets on me.
All right. I'll see you at the Jimmy Buffett concert. You can wear that shirt and maybe we'll go to it together. Okay. Ken Van Vechten, my friend, so appreciative of your time. Thank you for joining the podcast. We'll see you on the golf course soon, dude.
Thanks, bro. Appreciate the time.
All right, dudes. It's going to wrap it up for episode 65 of the Spicer Speaking Podcast again as we together endeavor season 3 of this program. Again, so appreciative of your time, your interest, your ears, listeners from New York to Minnesota to California, from the US to Germany, Italy, France, Canada, the UK, Philippines, Sweden, Japan, all over the world, really. So thankful for your interest and continued support of this show. Equally appreciative for the time of this week's guest, Ken Van Vechten. Be sure to keep your eyes peeled for his words, also appearing in publications coast to coast. Further appreciation extends this week to the sponsors that make this program go. That's going to start with our new sponsor. Again, very enthused, very happy, very excited to welcome Healthy Learning, one of the foremost publishers of instructional materials for health and wellness, fitness, exercise, sports medicine, California-based. When you go to healthylearning.com, you're going to find an all-ages library of well over 3,500 titles in all of these areas. Nutrition, strength conditioning, sports medicine, medical fitness, mental training. Over 3,500 titles. That includes books. There's also some awesome DVDs in there written by folks who are experts in their respective trades of sports, nutrition, and fitness. Again, let's all welcome Healthy Learning to the Spicer Speaking Podcast and find them online at healthylearning.com. The peak season is nigh. I mean, things are really soon to start pumping up right down the way at Desert Willow Golf Resort, one of the finest golf properties here in Southern California, if not the entire West Coast, 36 holes, Mountain View and Firecliff courses, respectively. It's actually over at Desert Willow just a few days ago. Not my best round, but so it goes sometimes. Haven't been playing that great of late. Nonetheless, always a pleasure to be over at Desert Willow. Be mindful of the overseed schedule. Courses, Desert Willow included, starting to switch to ryegrass. Rest assured, 18 holes always open. And the aforementioned Palm Desert Golf Academy, soon to start getting their signature golf schools underway. Hey, you're coming out here as a snowbird. Maybe you're coming out here for a long vacation. You know you need to brush up on your game. Sign up for one of those schools now at desertwillow.com. Internationally renowned golf photography from John and Janine Hennebry. You can find their vast international and domestic portfolio of courses shot all over the globe. Find it online and via their social media routes as well, Facebook and Instagram. It's eponymous. The Hennebrys, HENEBRYS.com. Everybody have a great week out there. No show next week. Uncle Juddy headed north of the border. Yonder Canada, Victoria, BC, play some golf, media trip, have a couple articles in tow, or at least one, I should say, confirmed assignment in tow for a future issue of the SCGA's 4 magazine. Looking forward to that travel. In the interim, I will be back shortly. I wish everybody a great week. Thanks again for your time and your interest. You be safe out there and be well.